All right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mercules. Welcome to episode 12 of the Massive Breakdown podcast. It is our 3-month anniversary, and we have a fantastic podcast for you today. This is the second podcast since Rise of Iron has come out, and we have a lot of stuff to talk about. As always, I am with my two co-hosts. I have Kit Kutcha and NK Cougar. And how are you guys doing on this fine Monday evening?
Well, I am just doing fan-friggin-tastic. I'll tell you what. Got a little raiding in last weekend. Got some sleep after grinding all week, I'm looking forward to this week. We've got some breaking news to talk about later. We've got weapons. I know you guys have got a lot of details on weapons to go over, so I'm just psyched to get into it.
How about you, Cougar?
I'm doing better than I deserve. I've been grinding those heroic strikes, trying to get my light level up to raid level. Other than that, I'm doing pretty well.
And I heard you became a cripple today, a day after your birthday.
Oh, no, I became a cripple on my birthday.
That's right, it was on your birthday, yeah.
Yeah, I had a 500-pound arc welder run over my foot, so I spent the latter half of my birthday in the emergency room trying to figure out how bad it was messed up, and lucky enough, I actually did not break any bones, which was pretty surprising considering I just kind of tore my foot out from under the wheel of that thing.
Jeez. You know, if you'd been a peg drag, you wouldn't have had that issue because you wouldn't even have any feet.
Yeah.
You just have little sticks down there. So, yeah, you might want to think about getting a hold of some of that SIVA and seeing what you can do.
Oh, I've got crutches. They work just the same.
Yeah. Speaking of birthdays, it's actually my birthday today, like literally right now. It's my birthday for another hour and 15 minutes.
That's right. Happy birthday, man.
Yes. September birthdays, right?
Yeah. Just watch out for heavier machinery.
I will try to avoid it. So, yeah, we are going to talk about quite a few things, and just like last week, we're going to try to avoid spoilers, this time for the raid. If you have not done the raid yet, you don't have to fear. We're going to have some tips and tricks for how to go into it, but we're not going to talk about anything that actually occurs during the raid, so you don't need to worry about raid spoilers.
That's right.
If we decide to talk about some story stuff, you've been warned, we might go over how awesome the final bosses were and things like that. But again, this is your spoiler warning. You don't have to worry about the raid, but you might have to worry about the story itself. Speaking of the story, speaking of SIVA, Owl Sector is apparently active again. The ARG that Bungie had put out to kind of build hype for Rise of Iron. I had thought it was done when Rise of Iron dropped, but apparently it's back going again. The site is updated. What do you know about that, Kutch?
So I've been doing some looking into this, since I got notification from a friend earlier that this was live again. So if you visit owlsector.bungie.net and in your language of choice, in the upper left above the map, you know, there's that Vanguard symbol. It says, please remain calm. It says Owl Sector Emergency Reporting Console. Right above that, there's a number that has appeared. And that number is a link that takes you to a networking simulation. Prompts you to begin, and if you hit that enter key, you're going to get the SIVA symbol, followed by the word node, a series of shapes, and a whole bunch of other stuff going on, including, you know, processing keys, what's clearly a whole lot of code to be cracked. There's some theory that this might be related to something in the raid. Now,
the legendary fifth terminal?
Indeed, it's quite possible, yeah. Basically, right now we've got a kind of a basic concept going on Reddit. I say we, I've got nothing to do with it. I'm just kind of monitoring the situation, keeping an eye on things. I submitted my data, of course, right away to try and help out the code breakers and very, very clever folks who are working on this. I want to share a little bit from J.M. Ferso on Reddit. Basically, they believe that the fundamental concept of the new ARG section has been solved, in quotes. They're just looking for more data to figure out what it actually means. So, like I mentioned, we've got that node. We've got an information forwarding protocol section, which apparently is how you find out like the next in line person, you know, the person to forward your information to. We've got some more information underneath that. Processing key, processing initialization vector. These are going to be useful for decrypting the wall of text that appears after that. There's just a wall of seemingly random characters. But those things are going to allow us to decrypt that. And then essentially we're going to have to find some kind of a chain of people who link up. Hard to say exactly how many people are going to be involved in that chain or what the end result is going to be at this point. So we don't, like I said, we don't really have any firm answers yet, but it sounds like we've got a process in place to try and figure this thing out. So if you want to help, if you want to participate, I got to advise you to head to, Reddit, look for the two mega posts right up top posted by, DTGBot. And submit your data. It sounds like they're recommending manually posting your data at this point. There's also a Google Doc that you can share your data in, but I think I'd recommend going both routes to make sure that it gets to the right people and we can get this thing figured out. Tons of discussion, tons of chaos going on, people trying to sort out what's going on. There's hope. There's light. And like I said, we've got a process. So very exciting right now.
And realistically, by the time this gets out, we'll hopefully have this out Tuesday in the afternoon or Tuesday night at some point. By the time this gets out, the hive mind may have figured it out on its own by that point. But as someone who only loosely follows along with these things, because I am not even close to smart enough to understand any of it, do you know what the conclusion was to part one of Owl Sector? I remember reading about magnificence and all those things, and I remember getting so far as the contamination had affected one of the researchers who was studying it and they had to be blocked off and then they closed off the city. But what was the conclusion of that story? Do you know? Did it have anything to do with SIVA? I kind of went dark for a couple days.
Yeah. So it actually did tie into the story of Rise of Iron, which, you know, we were all a little bit nervous about is this actually going to matter? You know, are we going to have a reason to care? Let me pull up the exact section here that really kind of ties it in. But, you know, one thing that ties it together, there was some talk about, you'll remember that the researcher that they were investigating, you know, the person who they think was behind these colonization nanites, which is what they actually were, brilliance, glory, splendor, magnificence, fortitude. These were nanites developed to make colonists stronger, faster, smarter, more productive. Developed at Clovis Bray on Mars. And so that's where that research was taking place. And it turns out that the Fallen actually went to Mars looking for information on SIVA, which we believe was actually developed by Clovis Bray. It was really a later incarnation of these nanites, which were all essentially kind of alpha tests done on, you know, humans, because that's totally ethical in the eyes of Clovis Bray. So that's kind of how it ties in, basically.
Interesting. So what ended up happening to all the infected guardians? I know they quarantined us from the city, but did our incredible light-filled bodies basically fight off the nanites, or did it turn out? Because I remember reading that didn't one of the people who they were testing the nanites on die, and didn't one of them, like, is that, I think bad things happened to some of the people they were testing the nanites.
Yeah,
on.
One of them went mute. One of them, I believe, actually just vanished and was never found again. A number of them experienced some other negative symptoms. For the most part, they were able to recover. The researcher who was in charge of the project actually found a cure, and then, of course, recommended, you know, that these any future trials be canceled, and was promptly fired by Clovis Bray as a result, and replaced by another scientist who was willing to go forward with the project. So we got some insight into Clovis Bray and the ethical principles at work there in the Golden Age science, or lack thereof.
All right, well, cool then. I didn't know that, so I'm glad you filled me in on that story. And I look forward to what the community comes up with to solve these ARGs. They're always a good time.
Yeah, so that's all there is. There's nothing really else to talk about on that ARG front right now. Hopefully, by the time you guys are listening to this, we'll have some more. We can talk about it on Twitter. I'll be on there. We'll be on Reddit. I at least am going to be following this pretty closely. So,
and I'll probably pay attention as much as I can. We didn't learn very much about SIVA in the actual story missions itself, though. I really love the story missions. I felt like this DLC was what the Dark Below should have been, in terms of a short little story campaign. It was only 5 missions compared to the Dark Below's 3. A relatively, I don't want to say short raid, but a raid that is not, you know, Vault of Glassian. But I felt like this was what they would have done with Dark Below if they could have done it. I mean, the story missions were fantastic. They took us to mostly new areas. We explored new things. There were cutscenes that were amazing. There were voiceovers. I really, really, really enjoyed the story when I first ran it. And I thought the final mission where you get to kill Jolder and a couple of the other Iron Lords who've been consumed by SIVA was one of the best things yet that they've done in this game in a story
100%.
Mission. It actually felt like something different. You know, it actually felt like I was seeing a new enemy, something that wasn't just a big version of every other enemy I've ever seen. I thought it was fantastic. But, and I've been following the Grimoire pretty closely. I don't really think, I don't necessarily know if they built SIVA up enough in the actual game. You know, I was feeling like SIVA was going to be this huge, big deal, and we were going to spend an entire portion of the game year defeating it, and then it kind of just, oh, well, we wiped it out in, you know, a couple hours or so. Saladin was pretty worried about it, but we've killed Crota, we've killed Atheon, we've killed Oryx, I guess. A bunch of Nanites are no big deal. But what are y'all thoughts? What y'all's thoughts on this this new campaign, this new story?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we weren't done with SIVA yet. From what I recall, all the way back on the hype train before this ever dropped, SIVA was supposedly a threat to Rasputin. And as we know, as of so far, Rasputin may be on a level with Oryx and Atheon and all of them as far as just pure power goes.
Sure.
Rasputin is one of the most powerful individual entities in the entirety of the game. So for SIVA to be a direct threat to Rasputin, you know, I don't think we're done with SIVA. I think it's going to make a comeback. Maybe something similar to the Taken Spring.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe in like an April update type thing where they brought Malak out for us to take down. Maybe they'll bring another SIVA boss out. I thought it was kind of funny. They talked about Rasputin. It's getting to the point now where at first it was like, let's wake up Rasputin because, you know, we think he's going to be able to help us a whole lot. And now it's at the point like maybe Rasputin doesn't actually like us. I remember one of the story missions, they talked about how they sent guardians to try to communicate with Rasputin and they found their bodies scattered across the Cosmodrome.
They found their body parts scattered across the Cosmodrome.
So he actually dismantled them. He didn't just kill them. Nope. He took them apart and then dropped their bodies in what I imagine was the shape of a giant smiley face when viewed from the air. But so in one of the Grimoire cards, it actually talks about pretty much confirming the theory that Rasputin attacked the Traveler to stop the Traveler from leaving.
That one's iffy.
I kind of believe that, though. I like the fact that all the damage on the Traveler is from the Earth side and not from outer space, like if the darkness was attacking it. But it did seem to make sense. And it also seems like Rasputin doesn't necessarily appreciate the Guardians interfering with whatever his plans are. I feel like he's playing, you know, intergalactic chess, and we're running around on the board kicking over the pieces and stuff without seeing the whole big picture, kind of. And he gets annoyed by us. Like, we're ants that most of the time he does his own thing and ignores us, but every once in a while we bite him. Even though we're not necessarily trying to hurt him, but that's just the feeling I'm getting about Rasputin.
And Rasputin's original protocols were to protect humanity, I believe at all costs, and would spend it's been running through my head, this is complete, you know, headcanon here. But with this whole addition of light and the ghosts and all that, our guardians may be far enough removed from actual humanity that Rasputin no longer recognizes them as such and classifies them as a threat.
Gonna have to rename this the Massive Loredown.
Yeah. Well, we don't normally talk too much about PvE stuff in here, so it's kind of cool to get a chance to discuss it a little bit. But, I don't know, did you have any thoughts on the story, Kutch? How'd you feel about it?
So, I have to admit, I was shocked when I realized I was on the final mission. I was having a ton of fun. Really enjoyed the level design, just the verticality of the spaces, the varying paths that we had. You know, it all kind of went the same place in the end, but there were choices there. You could go this way, you could go that way. You can get vantage points on your enemies if you go one way. You can come up and get into close combat if you go the other. There was just a lot to love about the level design itself. Obviously, the cutscenes blew me away. Loved those. I guess I kind of, to jump back to what you said, as far as building SIVA up, something that we've been talking about in my clan, we talk a lot about the storyline and PvE stuff. That's just kind of what a lot of us are into. And so something that we discussed is that it kind of felt like we needed just one more story mission to really explain why SIVA was a threat. Something that showed the true destructive power of SIVA. And I don't feel like we quite got that. But that said, I can't complain. I mean, the final, like you said, the final boss fight was just so satisfying. It was challenging in a way that was new and fresh, and I hope that we see more like that. That was actually, we had talked about a lot of possible end bosses for the storyline. I don't remember who said it, so I can't give anybody credit, but that was actually one idea that we had, is that, you know, what if it's the Iron Lords who died in the chamber? What if they're not dead? I made some air quotes there for you. What if they are SIVA-fied and they're the end boss? You know, so we were hoping to get a lot more going on with the SIVA-fied Iron Lords. But I guess the only thing I'll say that might be spoilery is we haven't seen all of them. There are 8 Iron Lords that died in that chamber, and I think we've only seen 3, maybe 4. I can't quite remember all the names from the fight.
I think it was just 3.
Wait, I don't think there were 8. I thought there were 7 died in there because
you're right.
Because Ephrodite is still alive. Oh wait, was that a spoiler? No, that's fine.
No, let's talk about that. Ephrodite's going to be the Iron Banner vendor.
Yeah, because Ephrodite's still alive.
So, yeah. So you're right. So there are some unaccounted for Iron Lord SIVA-fied. I don't know what you want to call them. SIVA zombie Iron Lords. Not accounted for, whereabouts unknown, powers unknown. Looking forward to finding out what is up with that, because as we know from the Taken King, Bungie loves to time gate content.
Calling it right now. Taken, we're going to have a Taken Spring, we're going to have a SIVA Spring, we're going to have a Scion Flayer style strike with the remaining Iron Lords.
I would love it.
We'll bookmark this podcast and see how correct you are. Come SIVA Spring, like you say.
Will it be SIVA Winter? I don't know.
Spring.
It'll be Spring.
I think SIVA Spring sounds fine. We'll come up with a more creative... I'm sure Reddit will come up with a more creative name before we do.
Yeah, those guys are smarter than I am.
Yeah. But I've always had this issue, and it was something I was thinking about with Destiny games, and it was that we get told by Saladin, and we get told by all these people, Aeris, that the bosses we're going to fight are so hard and so difficult, and they're impossible, and they killed the 7 Iron Lords. And then I go in there with one of my friends, screaming like a girl, running around in circles, smashing people with a giant flaming axe, and kill them all. And it was something I thought about with the raids too, not the new raid, but like with Crota, with Oryx, with Atheon. It's like, this isn't really that hard. Like, I picked up, you know, 4 randoms off of LFG and we beat a god. This is pretty easy. And then I thought, but actually, how hard would it be if the internet wasn't around and I didn't have someone else telling me how to do this? It would literally feel like beating a god. It would be so trial and error. It would take me forever. And I was like, that's probably actually how difficult it should be.
Yeah.
You know? So I've done the very best I can to not look at the strategies for this raid. I kind of have an idea of what's going on. But I want to see, I want to test a little bit of that difficulty and actually see how hard it is. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I'll pass on that. I'm trying to get ready for trials.
You need that high light level gear. That's all you need.
I'm 367, Cougar. You got some catching up to do.
It's okay. I'll be ready by the time it comes around.
Well, speaking of gear and gearing up for trials, we're actually going to go back to what we do best and talk about some weapons for you. We mentioned briefly a few of the vendor weapons last week that we thought you should pick up. And we're going to go in depth a little bit more on some of those. And then we're going to talk about the trial weapons. I actually just finished a massive breakdown on all of the trial weapons that are coming out. As far as I know, at least according to the database, it doesn't look like we're going to get a Trials heavy weapon or sidearm. It doesn't look like there's a Trials machine gun, rocket launcher, obviously not a Trials sword, and it doesn't look like there's a Trials sidearm. So I could be wrong. We could see something on an update between now and then. But yeah, like I said, the database doesn't have anything right now. So I don't know, Cougar, you want to do the vendor weapons first or Trials weapons first?
We'll go ahead and go with the Trials weapons first.
Alrighty then. It actually looks like we have a really good batch of Trials weapons this year. Like, a really good batch. When I was going through the breakdown and looking at them, I was actually thinking, I want all of these guns. Except for the handgun.
It's always the hand cannon.
I shouldn't say that. I don't want the hand cannon for PvP, but I actually think it could be very nice in PvE. So I'm going to try to go over some of these real fast. Just some highlights. I'll put the full thing in text tomorrow. But the sniper rifle. I'm going to be chasing the sniper rifle. I was hyping it up to Cougar and Kutch before we started the podcast. But basically, it is the old... I call them the high-impact class. Bungie, in their infinite wisdom, calls them the medium-impact class, even though they are the second-highest impact class out of six. I don't know how that makes them medium... So I'm going to refer to them as the high impact class, but it is basically the same as the LDR, the 1000 yard stare, the longbow synthesis. It's the ones that do 388 to the head, 156 to the body. What makes it so good is that it actually comes with linear compensator. It has barrel perks. It does not have scope perks, or it does not have scope choices. It has barrel perks, and linear compensator increases the damage. Actually enough so that it can kill any guardian at 9 armor or less. And we tested this with the Steel Piercer in private games just to make sure. Any guardian with 9 armor or less is going to still die in their super to this weapon if you headshot them. What that means is all Blade Dancers will die to it. And any Warlock that's not wearing the Ram will die to it. Who won't? Sunbreakers. If they're at 10 armor, which is max armor for a Sunbreaker, they'll survive it with, I think, like 1 or 2 health left. And then Ramlocks, who are Stormcallers or Sunsingers, will be able to survive it if they're surpassing 9 armor. But besides that, it comes with either Perfect Balance or Injection Mold. For those of you who want the faster equip speed, it has Snapshot for faster ADS, and then it has Unflinching or Life Support. So I know Unflinching, it looked like it got nerfed in the last update, but it actually didn't. I did the math on it. It still decreases the flinch by the exact same amount. What happened was they increased the amount of flinch, which means that they decreased the amount Unflinching does so that it still changes it by the exact same amount. It is a tiny little nerf when it gets down to like 3 or 4 shots into being hit. But if you're taking, you know, 4 or 5 shots with a sniper rifle, you're probably going to die anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Unflinching is not going to be helping you that much there. But life support, I've been running the Devil's Dawn, obviously, which has life support. And I cannot tell you how many times it saves me in PvP where I barely kill someone and there's someone else and my health is immediately back up. It's fantastic. So I actually think life support is closing in on a very, very, you know, high level perk for PvP. So if I had to say, go chase something from Trials, I would say the Winged Word, the sniper rifle, is going to be the first thing that you should probably really, really hunt down.
And do we have an inventory size stat on that?
Yes, it's 45. It's 45, so that 45. Means as long as you run sniper boots, I think you're going to be pulling 4 per box.
Nice.
And you'll start with 6 shots with... I think you'll start with 6 shots if you just have sniper boots. I don't know what it is that gets you to 12. I guess it'd be a chest piece and sniper boots would get you to 12.
Do you know how much the inventory stat is increased per armor?
Not for snipers, I don't, but there is a post up on Crucible Playbook right now that I believe details it. I do not know because I'm a hunter and I don't really have a chest piece that gives me increased special weapon. I never really get to use it, so it wasn't something I looked at. I know I did the inventory breakdown for the rocket launchers, but sniper rifles will probably be something that I'll have to get around to at some point in time. So it's not the worst inventory stat in the world, but it's not, you know, it's not truly fantastic. I think it's like dead average in terms of what it is. For comparison, 1,000 yard stare is 50. I mean, the longbow synthesis is 10, so nothing is awful, as awful as that. Event Horizon's 49, Devil's Dawn is 50. So yeah, it's right in that middle range. But I think you do need sniper rifle boots to pull four per brick.
So I actually just went ahead and pulled up the details here on that for everybody. Credit here to a couple of different people, Ebo LAXB and CH4. I'll just call them Chameleon off of Reddit. Totally full credit as far as this data goes. The Winged Word has, the, like you said, base inventory of 45. And then it looks like you'd need a special ammo chest plus boots, or you would need transversive steps, which are the Warlock exotic boots, plus a sniper ammo chest. So I guess the special ammo chest actually gives a plus 30, whereas the sniper ammo chest only gives plus 20 to inventory. So that's interesting to know.
There you go. There's the numbers for you right there. So I don't even have to do a breakdown of that. Someone else already did, so that's perfect.
So yeah, that'll get you to, let's see, that'll get you to 9 rounds to start. There is no way for the Winged Word to get to 12. So there you go.
All right. And then a couple other things to talk about. They've got an auto rifle that's the 88-8 impact class, which is basically the same as the Monte Carlo and stuff like that. Normally, I don't recommend ARs at all, but because Supremacy is such a popular game type now, and it's relatively casual as far as it goes at the current time, I actually think this is a pretty good option for it. Supremacy focuses really hard on close quarters combat, and I am liking using ARs in it, even though they're a little bit underrated. I still probably wouldn't go with the high impact AR class, they're pretty awful, but low and mid impact ARs are decent enough in that class, as long as you're not, you know, facing a bunch of sweaty tryhards. They got a scout rifle that is unfortunately the same impact class as the Hung Jury, the Boolean Gemini. It's not great for PvP, but it comes with accurized ballistics, which actually bumps the damage up enough to 3-shot people at low armor, as long as you hit all crits. That does kind of take away from what makes the gun passable, which is the fact that you can kill in 2 crits and 2 bodies. If you have to go for 3 crits, well, then you might as well just kind of use a Mida. So I don't really recommend this gun for anyone other than people who are trying to learn snipers at a lower level of Crucible play. And I think it's probably going to be really good there. The Pulse Rifle is the Hawksaw archetype, and it actually has some really, really interesting perks to it. It doesn't look like it's great with its base stats, but basically, depending on what perks you choose, you can either make up for its low base stats in some areas or really build on the strengths that it already has. And I think it's probably going to be a competitive weapon similar to the Hawksaws and the PDXs. Might not be as competitive as a God Roll in either of those, but I think it's going to be good. The hand cannon is a low impact type. You're probably going to want to stay away from that in PvP just because it's got horrible base range and it requires 2 headshots and 1 body shot to kill. You're way better off with the Palindrome. Shotgun, it's not a very high impact one. It's not the Matador, it's not the Party Crasher. The closest thing I can compare it to is maybe 2 to the Morgue. So it's going to be decent, or maybe the Diedrich's Retort. It's going to be decent for PvP if you want a little bit faster rate of fire, but it's not going to be fantastic, I don't think. It does come with basically the God Roll for its archetype. Accurized Ballistics, Hammer Forged, Hand-Loaded Rangefinder. So it does have that. It's going to close in on the max range cap. I think it's going to be either 29 or 30.
It'll be out of 32. With smooth ballistics.
30 with smooth ballistics, but then you don't get the extra 1 damage that Accurized gives you. So, you know, that's true. A trade-off. You have to choose what you want to do. It's not going to be a Party Crasher where it's doing, what is a Party Crasher doing? Like 23 per pellet with, because it can use aggressive. So it's not going to be the best, but if you need a placeholder, it'll probably do. And then the fusion rifle is actually what I'm second most excited about. It's very close to a Susanoo if you pick the right perks, but it's a Susanoo that basically everybody can use. You're going to want to run accelerated coils on it because it's got a decent amount of impact, and it's not going to bring the bolts to kill up, but it is going to bring the charge rate and make it faster. And when you look at the comparison between the Stellar Vestige and the Susanoo, they're basically like dead on, except for the Stellar has actually more aim assist. They got basically the exact same charge rate when you use accelerated coils, the exact same impact. But the Stellar Vestige actually also has linear compensator, which makes the bolt pattern almost completely vertical, which means it's really, really easy to control it. Yeah. It means it's really, really easy to control it with just a forward, for me, I play inverted, but with a downward flick of the stick, right as you fire, right before you fire, and it'll get those bolts nice and tight, and then perfect balance and range finder. Both of those things are going to help with the bolt spread as well. So I'm really excited about that because I've been playing a lot of fusions, in Supremacy because I can't stand shotguns and I will never be able to stand shotguns. So I can't even bring myself to play with them. But I've been using a lot of fusions and I've been wishing I could pull the Susanoo over from my Warlock to my Hunter and I can't. So this is going to be the first thing I try to get after the sniper rifle so I can finally start playing with one. But that's basically it for Trials Weapons. If you guys have any questions, let me know. If not, we can move on to vendors though.
No, man, I think you really covered it really well. I didn't quite catch the perks on that pulse rifle and just those are... aside from hand cannons, those are kind of my jam for primary weapons. What was that layout again?
So here's the way it's going to go. With the Blind Perdition, which is the pulse rifle, there's two ways that you can kind of look at it. It doesn't have a great base recoil direction. It's got 60. So a lot of people are going to want to be looking for counterbalance to correct that recoil direction. And it does have counterbalance in the last perk slot. But you trade that for Outlaw. So the way I'm looking at it is you can use Smart Drift Control as the barrel perk, which actually does increase the recoil direction. Then you can go with Small Bore because Smart Drift Control actually decreases your range. So Smart Drift Control, Small Bore, bump that range back up. Hand Loaded, bump the range up even more, and then Outlaw. And you're going to need Outlaw because you're only going to have a mag size of, I think, 18 when you roll with Small Bore.
Ooh.
So it's going to be low,
gotcha.
But Outlaw is going to make it a snap to reload, especially if you have pulse rifle gloves. Or there's another way I was looking at it. You can use Smooth Ballistics in the first column, which Smooth Ballistics actually bumps the range up, right? But it decreases stability. It also increases aim assist by 5, which is nice. Then you use Hand Laid Stock in the second column. And what Hand Laid Stock is going to do is it's kind of going to negate that range bonus, but it already comes with, for this archetype, pretty high range. So it's going to negate that range bonus, but it's going to shoot the stability way, way up there. Then you use Hand Loaded again. You bump that range up a little bit more. So it's going to have good range for the archetype and high stability and more aim assist. And you're going to have to use Counterbalance to get that vertical recoil pattern. You don't have to. If you don't want to use Counterbalance, I'm one of the people who, when I play, I don't really use Counterbalance if I can help it. But I think the majority of players are going to want to use Counterbalance on this. The vertical recoil pattern is easier to control, just point blank. So you're probably going to end up with Counterbalance there and you're going to lose out on Outlaw. So those are the two ways. And it does have high caliber rounds in the same column as Hand Loaded. I don't recommend that anymore just because it's simply not really necessary. With the recent changes to flinch, with high rate of fire weapons like this, you're flinching someone so much when you're hitting these bursts that you're better off pushing out the damage fall off than you are trying to flinch them even more. I mean, no sniper or very few snipers are going to be able to go head to head with you if you're hitting them all crit shots, max rate of fire at this gun. It's just not going to happen anymore. So that's what I suggest. Me personally, I'm going to go with the Smooth Ballistics, Hand Laid Stock, Hand Loaded, and Outlaw roll. I'm not going to use Counterbalance. I don't feel personally that I'm going to need Counterbalance when my recoil is going to be almost minimal anyways, but that's just me. And I like the addition of extra aim assist. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great answer. And I hope that helps a lot of other people who might have a similar question. While you're hanging on to your PDX 45 packages, or mourning the Hawksaw roll that you never picked up, this could be a good one to chase in the meantime.
Absolutely. All right. Well, no more questions. What about vendor roles then, Cougar? What do you have to say on that?
So we're going to get into vendor roles, but before we did that, I wanted to take a look at a few weapons that can drop from the Crucible. And we'll start off with what has really been my personal favorite, the Ill Will. I've had God knows how many drop. It's been incredible how many ill wills. I think I've got 3 in my inventory right now. And for the most part, you're almost guaranteed to get an awesome roll. All right, so we've only got a few perk options on the ill will. Your first active column only has Outlaw, Rangefinder, Triple Tap, Clown Cartridge. So really, you're only looking for one of two. You want Outlaw or Rangefinder. Again, my personal recommendation for the middle tree is Braced Frame. Almost any roll that we're going for, you're going to want to have a reduced mag. Aside from Braced Frame, the other best option would be Hammer Forged. You don't want to reduce your stability or your already god-awful reload speed. And the final column has Mulligan, Third Eye, Reactive Reload, Luck in the Chamber. With Luck in the Chamber, you will two-shot any armor guardian with two headshots. With Braced Frame, you're taking that down to a 40% chance of a two-shot kill, and it is highly likely that it happens early in the magazine. That's usually where it happens for me. So
nice.
Keep an eye out for the ill will. Reactive reload also works well. You'll just have to get that first kill the old-fashioned way. So aside from that, the Matador 64 is back. It is indeed possible to roll rifled barrels, so you can hit 70 impact, the highest possible for a shotgun, with the maximum range, rangefinder, and performance bonus, full auto, spray and player cascade. So it looks like Matador is going to be back on top as far as shotguns go. Again, that is a crucible drop. It drops pretty frequently. Aside from that, there is a machine gun that is decent. There's a rocket launcher that, at its very best, is a cut-rate ash factory. It's really not that great. The JLB 47 or 42 will serve your purposes better. You've got a max rate of fire auto rifle. I forget the name exactly right now, but
it's the Hexcaster Arc.
That is correct, yep. It's decent. I won't give it much more than that. It's okay. I had it drop myself. Didn't get a counterbalance roll. It's got, pretty terrible stats overall. It is a refurbished year one weapon. So look for no Braced Frame. You can only get hand laid stock small bore. But that doesn't really matter because counterbalance is not a possible choice. Base recoil direction is 60. So at the very best, you're looking for OAS, rangefinder, either perfect balance, small bore, or hand laid stock, and feeding frenzy spray and play third eye life support. So that is not a recommended weapon. And really, that's it for the crucible drops. So back to vendor weapons. We've got really got a great set of vendor weapons this go around. Yesterday we talked about the palindrome, the crucible hand cannon. That would be excellent to keep an eye out for. What I'm going to be talking about here, however, is what you need to keep an eye out for in your packages from ranking up. As far as Vanguard goes, the Vanguard has a maximum impact pulse rifle called the Parthian Shot. I think it's supposed to be a pun on parting shot. With the Steady Hand Iron Sights and Braced Frame, which it can roll, it has a total of 94 stability and 52 range. It does have counterbalance as a possible selection. And the first column, as with almost every max impact pulse rifle, is personal preference. Got life support on mine. It's really pretty fun to use.
Quick lore note there for you. The Parthian Shot could be mistaken for Parthian Shot or even the Gordian Knot if you are getting your ancient peoples mixed up. But the Parthian Shot's actually a military tactic made famous, though not today, by the Parthians, an ancient Iranian people. The Parthian archers would mount up on light horses and then retreat at a full gallop while shooting backwards at the enemies pursuing them. So
interesting.
That is
so
interesting.
So it's a literal parting shot then.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, I'd say that's where parting shot came from. Yeah.
Could well be. Could be some relation, absolutely. So anyway, one good strategy.
That's great.
That needs to be my strategy in Destiny, actually. Run away and keep shooting.
Well, that's not a bad strategy at all. So, continuing with the theme of packages, another Vanguard weapon that I'd like to recommend is the Angel's Advocate. I've had one drop for myself already. Really not all that different from the Vendor Roll. I got it with Outlaw Explosive Rounds Perfect Balance in Reactive Reload compared to the Vendor Roll of Outlaw Explosive Rounds Small Bore in Reactive Reload. It is a Mita archetype weapon, and it's impressive. The recoil is very easy to control. Explosive Rounds makes it very well near impossible to return fire. Even when I've been shot, when I'm the second to shoot in an engagement, Explosive Rounds has absolutely won me several engagements that I should have lost.
Nice. I love Explosive Rounds. It's good to hear.
Yeah, it's got great aim assist. It does have very low magazine size, so I would recommend a reload perk of some sort. Stay away from Small Bore, because Small Bore it's really going to hurt your mag size. So, jumping over to the Crucible Quartermaster, we've got the B29 Party Favor, which is a Hawksaw PDX-45 archetype weapon. Has a base range of 31, base stability of 65, so a little bit higher base range than the rest of our available options, a little bit lower stability. Look for, say, Small Bore, Perfect Balance, then the ubiquitous Counterbalance, since we've got a recoil direction of 59. Look to bump your range up with a small boost to stability on that. On the theme of pulse rifles, we're going to look at the Waltz from Future War Cult. That is a Grasp of Malak. I believe it's Malak.
It is Malak, yeah.
After hearing Eris dramatically say Malak.
That's right.
Enough times. This is another low recoil direction weapon, so again, look for Counterbalance, say Perfect Balance, or Small Bore, because we do have a pretty low base range of 28. We've already mentioned the Palindrome. It's mid-impact. You know what perks to look for.
So crispy.
It is. It has a great Vendor Roll. As far as sniper rifles go, we've got the Event Horizon from the Crucible Quartermaster. Really, all you need to look for with this weapon is quick draw and your scope of choice. The top three scopes, in no particular order, I would say long view, short gaze, and ambush. Personally, I prefer the long view. It's more of a feeling thing. This is the best inventory size on the high impact snipers that we've seen yet. And it is the only archetype that is capable of killing any armor guardian in their super. So everybody using the 1,000-yard stare, longbow, etc., still, move on from it. If you're trying to kill people in their supers, it's not going to work. Dead Orbit has the Last Ditch 001. We talked about this the other day. This is one of the ones that does not have rifled barrel. Instead, you've got two separate passive perk slots similar to Suros, except one of those can actually roll an active perk as well. But you're looking for both hand-loaded and hammer-forged. And with a base range of 23, I believe you can get away with Accurized Ballistics, Linear Compensator, or Field Choke for a slight boost to impact and still be either 31 or the max of 32 range. Moving along to Fusion Rifles, Future War Cult has the Waiting, which is excellent. It is a 95 impact, which is just below the Dark Blade Spite, which I believe is 97. I would look for accelerated coils on this one, since you're most likely going to need 5 bolts to kill. Well, no, you need four bolts to kill most of the time, but accelerated coils is going to give you a little extra time on that. And, you know, five bolts isn't that bad. It's a great impact. So look for accelerated coils. I still will not endorse Rangefinder. I'm not a big fan of it. Look for hot swap, life support, whatever you want. The reflex sight for slightly higher aim assist, that'll boost you from 59 to 64. Crucible, look for each new day with accelerated coils again, because you're still going to be at a 5 bolt kill. The reflex sight, and for personal curiosity, this fusion rifle can roll counterbalance. I have not had a chance to run a counterbalance fusion rifle. Guys, have you? I'm curious to see how well it works.
I mean, it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It makes the recoil straight up and down. So your bolts are less likely to kind of blossom out to the sides and more likely to just follow a line up, which definitely makes it easier. The problem is the line up is actually more of a vertical jump than it normally would be. So if you're good at like pushing that stick down with the right timing and canceling out, it's fantastic. If you're not, it's going to seem a little off to you right at first. But I like it. Anything that makes a fusion rifle bolt spread easier to control, I'm all for. It's one of the things where I actually would suggest counterbalance. Not that I think it's a necessary perk, because it's not, but it does help. It makes it easier.
Yeah, if we could get counterbalance on the Thezon, I'd be overjoyed.
That's awesome. Moving along, we just went over each new day, the Crucible Quartermaster Fusion Rifle. Back to Dead Orbit. Worlds to Come 001, since their theme is running away from Earth. We're looking at a charge rate of 22, impact of 87, which again, you can take accelerated ballistics, or accelerated coils, excuse me, and eat the slight damage reduction, still have a 5 bolt kill. However, you do have the opportunity to roll at very least Hammer Force to increase your velocity, so if you would like to make a trade-off for that over the accelerated coils, that's not a bad idea. Better range on a fusion rifle, as long as that range actually affects your range bar, will increase your speed, your bolt velocity.
Yep.
So keep an eye out for that. I remember the very first Iron Banner fusion rifle with rifled barrel was an absolute monstrosity. It could hit cross map distances. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. And moving along yet again, we're going to hit up some heavy weapons with the rocket launchers. Future War Cult rocket launcher, the Warpath, skip on it. It has absolutely awful base velocity. You're not going to get it to an acceptable level for PvP. It's just not going to happen. Instead, go to the Crucible Quartermaster. Hope you rank up Crucible and get something wicked. It has a base blast radius around 96, a velocity of 67. So if you can throw together Javelin and Soft Launch, you're looking at low 80s, I believe, maybe mid 80s in velocity with a low 90 blast radius, which is comparable, I believe, to a perfect JLB-47.
Plus, it's got a better name. I mean,
Something Wicked does sound much better than JLB-47.
I'm already intrigued.
I agree. Machine guns, the Vanguard Quartermaster again, the Bone Crusher.
Mm.
This is the fastest optimal time to kill for machine guns, with a 0.4 second time to kill with two critical shots and one body, or 0.6 with four body shots. The barrel modifiers will not affect your time to kill, so whatever you want, be it linear compensator, smart drift control, smooth ballistics to take the abysmal aim assist of 31 up to 36, which is still pretty god-awful. Base range of 32 is acceptable, but you could go for better. The base stability of 22 is bad. You want something for that. So look for a stability boost of some sort, maybe smart drift control and small bore.
I gotta say one thing about the Bone Crusher, just because I've been playing with a Bane and the Taken a lot, which is the same archetype, and if you can't get yourself a stability perk, because the rate of fire is so slow, you can actually feather the trigger like people do with the last word, like pretend like it's a scout rifle, basically. And it will really help with the stability issues you might otherwise have if you're trying to hold it full auto, and you're not really going to lose that much on the time to kill at all. Because the rate of fire, like I said, is so slow. So you can actually feather it, and you'll actually then notice that the aim assist stays more effective on those first shots. And you can, you know, kind of use it like a giant hard-hitting scout rifle, which is pretty fun. That's, I don't do it all the time because it's obviously way more difficult to do that than it is to just hold down the trigger and spray and pray. But if you have one that doesn't come with stability perks, it's something you can look into.
I took the Bone Crusher into the raid. I'll give you a suggestion there. Maybe I'll save that. We'll talk about some suggestions I have for getting raid ready without spoiling it when we get through the vendor weapons here. But I took it into the raid, just a random drop that I got, and found it super effective, actually. I'm not sure it's the optimal heavy choice necessarily, but it definitely is effective. Yeah, I need to do that quest still. Was too busy running strikes, didn't get around to it, but I have a stability of 2 on my Bone Crusher, and I will say that feathering the trigger definitely does work. It helps that you've got much larger targets in the raid than you necessarily do in the Crucible, and that they move much more predictably, but totally effective in PvE as well as PvP.
Along the lines with feathering the trigger, this is going to slow down your time to kill. However, it is better to slow down your time to kill and conserve your ammunition than to spray that and to potentially waste ammo on shots that you've missed. You know, you're going to increase your time to kill if you miss anyway. So if you've got a low stability Bone Crusher, take the time to feather that trigger, get used to it, learn how to do it, and make it work for you. So we've gone over rocket launchers, machine guns. The chaotic neutral from the Crucible Quartermaster is, I believe, the impact class below that, or 2 below that, with a time to kill of 0.5 seconds with critical shots. Any increase in impact from a barrel modifier will take the body shot time to kill down to the half a second as well. So look for something like linear compensator so that you can help with your recoil direction a little bit. See, that's it for heavy weapons. I did miss a hand cannon, the Whale from Future War Cult, which in the beginning I did think that was Whale as in W-H-A-L-E, and I was slightly confused by that.
I was on the same page.
And I really expected it to be Maximum Impact, thanks to that name choice.
It was a little confusing. They didn't spell it out for us in the videos when they talked about it.
Yeah, but as it is with every Min Impact hand cannon, you know what to look for. Reactive reload is never a bad choice. Luck in the chamber will not allow you to two-shot maximum armor guardians. Reactive reload will. But Luck in the Chamber has a 3% lower damage boost. It is a 30% damage boost compared to Reactive Reload's 33%, and that does make a very big difference. Mercules, you mentioned earlier that mid-impact hand cannons do have trouble with max armor guardians. Is that correct?
Yeah. So with mid-impact hand cannons, prior to doing some testing, I had assumed that 10 armor was the 200 level cutoff. But in the testing that I was doing, I found that 10 armor, so max armor, Sunbreakers, a lot of Titans, Ramlocks can hit that, obviously. Hunters can't hit it. Warlocks without Ram can't hit it. But 10 armor will survive 2 body shots and a headshot from a mid-impact hand cannon, which does exactly 200 damage. They will survive 10 headshots from an auto rifle, which is supposedly does 200 damage. They will survive 8 headshots from a Hawksaw, which supposedly does 200 damage. So realistically, what's probably going on is that there's some decimals at play in the damage the weapons do, and they're not actually doing the damage they say they are. They're doing less. But the fact of the matter is that if you're at 10 armor, you will survive the one headshot, two body shot combo from a mid-impact hand cannon. So that is something to look out for. I don't think it's going to probably change too much in the way the Crucible functions, just because it's worked like this for a long time and people didn't really notice it. But that might be an extra reason for you, if you are a Titan, to maybe try to push yourself up to 10 armor if you're not already there. And I don't think 10 armor is banned in sweats, is it? It's just max armor that's banned.
That's iffy. I'm not sure if that would be considered max armor. I'm not sure if max armor is considered your armor bar being filled up all the way, if it's a choice of perks, or if it's, you know, having basically unstoppable and a chest piece that increases arc armor. I'm not sure what the exact definition of a max armor Titan is.
I think it's usually spelled out in the individual tournament or league, kind of like what you can't use. But a lot of times they'll ban specific things to make it impossible anyway. Unstoppable, I think I've seen banned. Some of the rule sets I've looked at.
Titans can hit 12 armor, I think, with unstoppable and a chest piece and max armor on their build. So that definitely throws you way up there. I forget, we were doing some testing just to get rough numbers, just to see what you could survive. And I think it took a 12 armor Titan like 211 damage to die is what we added up. And obviously those numbers are, you know, not solid numbers because of the decimal issue that there is out there and the way Bungie rounds. But yeah, it was like 211 displayed damage to kill a 12 armor Titan.
Wow.
And an 11 armor Titan, it was like 206. So just, you know, keep that in mind. And I forget what the RAM adds. I think the RAM adds 3 armor now, which means that Warlocks can get up to 11 armor as well total. So they can be, actually, they might be able to get up to 12 too.
I think they can hit Void Walker with Angry Magic, max armor, and a chest piece would be 12. Everything else has to settle for 11.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% certain on those. I've been putting off revealing all of that information until I finish those tests, but that is something that I've been working on. Now that private matches are out, that and damage drop-off numbers for weapons like ARs and things like that are things I've been looking at. So keep an eye out for those. But yeah, so that's kind of news to me. I think it might be news to a few other people too, that the 10 armor is a little bit more effective than I previously thought it was.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. As far as my packages to keep an eye out for, I'm going to go ahead and call it at that. I know this has been lower quality than I normally put out, but you'll have to forgive me between, you know, a crushed foot and missing my normal prep time. This was it's a little difficult, and Bungie's API has not allowed me to have the vendor list in front of me. That's been killer.
I think you did a great job, man. I think you covered a lot of weapons that people should be looking for, and we've got, you know, we've got a lot of weeks ahead of us here to revisit these things in more detail. I think right now it's all about grabbing what's good, you know, getting a good start. And
yeah, I'm definitely looking forward. Hopefully I can pull that trial sniper rifle.
Yeah, well, again, I do need to stress that all this is based because the previews, obviously, I don't have the trial sniper rifle. I'm just looking at the database numbers. And the database has made a fool of me before by showing me numbers on the guns and then the stat bars are wrong in actual play. But if everything holds up, and almost everything has held up so far that I've checked, the biggest issue they have is their mag sizes are wrong on a lot of things. Machine guns and auto rifles and pulse rifles especially have issues with their mag sizes being incorrect in the database. I don't know why.
Makes no sense.
Like, I think it listed the raid auto rifles having like a mag size of 57 or something absurd. And I was like, I don't think that's what it is, because it was supposed to be a high impact, I believe. But, you know, if the database numbers hold up when the winged word starts dropping, it is going to be a killer sniper. I mean, I can tell you that I will be looking for one, and it will be my main go-to sniper when I do get it. So I think that's it for our weapon discussion for this week. But I guess we'll close out with Kutch has some tips for going into the raid that he wants to share with everybody.
So I guess by way of segue, I actually had one other weapon I just wanted to mention, throw out there for people to consider. This is a raid weapon. I actually have one myself. The Quantiplasm is a shotgun, And I was just super happy when I saw the perk set on this shotgun. I think you will be too. Now, it's not a max range shotgun. That's the drawback. It is a high impact shotgun. It's the one I've got right now, sitting at 68 range. I'm looking at it. There's no way to hit 70 because we don't have aggressive ballistics on it. But you've got your pick of linear compensator accurized ballistics or field choke. You've got a middle column with some static bonuses, a small bore, speed reload, and hand loaded. For me, small bore is the obvious choice. Not that I care about the stability. I certainly don't appreciate the mag size reduction or the reload speed issue, but that increased range is obviously key for a shotgun to have success. And the range on small bore is much bigger than hand loaded, so it really is worthwhile. But the fun thing about it, and you may have seen some of these interesting perks were leaked ahead of time, but we've got Battle Runner on this gun, which normally I would consider a kind of a trash perk. I don't know if you guys would disagree with that or not, but Battle Runner grants a brief boost to the sprint's top speed after you get a kill. So, Cougar's making eyebrows at me. Anyway, so Battle Runner basically makes you faster after you get a kill, which isn't, you know, I guess an awful thing in and of itself, but it's usually competing with perks that are just better. However, on this shotgun, you've also got a special unique raid perk, Running Interference, which grants increased armor while Battle Runner is active. So what that means is if you're running one of those high armor titans or warlocks or one of those very fragile hunters who always needs extra armor, you get a kill. Now you're a lot faster. If you're running Memory of Yolder, as I am, you can sprint constantly. And so you're now sprinting faster than ever and also have bonus armor, which makes you that much harder to kill, allowing you to close in for another shotgun kill and keep the chain rolling. It's a lot of fun. You are noticeably faster in the Crucible when you're running around with it. It is really fun to play with. Also good for PvE. Does have a damage bonus against Fallen. And it also gives you bonus agility when equipped in both PvE and PvE, PvP. So that makes you faster all the time. So, again, kind of an alternative to your typical high-impact shotguns. You're losing out on range. It only hits 25 with small bore, so it's 6 range short, which does hurt your one-hit kill distance. But, you know, if you get a drop, it's worth experimenting with. And that's all I'm going to say about that here. I know I'm taking up a lot of time talking about that, but I think it's worth mentioning.
If I can jump in real quick, that just kind of threw an idea into my head. That sounds like it would be an absolutely horrifying thing for a Radiant Skin Sunbreaker to use, or Sunsinger.
Ooh.
I'd say use Firebolt Grenades with Viking Funeral and Touch of Flame, max armor. Use your Firebolt Grenades to weaken your enemies by tagging them with it. Use the shotgun to get a kill to increase your agility or your speed and your armor. And I could see a good Radiant Skin Sunsinger using that to wipe entire teams.
Yeah, between the shotgun, the melee shield, if you're running that, the super, yeah, that's... Maybe we should edit that part out. I don't know if I want... I don't know if I want to play against that.
I actually wouldn't object to that because I think I might test that out.
We'll probably leave it in.
That's a pretty scary sounding build, actually. I don't want to run into that in Trials.
No, thank you. I need all the help I can get, so if you see me, just sit down and don't use that build. All right, well, moving away from PvP and Trials, I know a lot of people are still working on getting their first, maybe their second raid in. I've still got clan mates who are working on getting their level up. You know, obviously not everybody can take time off to grind out those levels. Some people have to go to the hospital and get treated for dropping arc welders on their feet. Other people just have jobs, I guess. So, a couple of tips as you're going into the raid. If you have not yet done it, I'm not going to spoil any of the fights. I'm going to let you experience those in whatever way you choose. There are a lot of guides out there if you want to go in prepared fully. If you want to go in blind, I highly recommend it. Blind, it is just incredibly fun. So first off, light level. You might hear people saying, oh, you have to be at least 365 to do the raid. That is so not true. You probably do have to be 365 to finish the raid. That final fight, you are going to get your face wrecked if you are any less than 365. Even being, I think I was 363, 364, somewhere in that vicinity, going into that final fight, and it was brutal. I'd recommend really getting close to 370 before going in there if you're not you know, really on point, really confident in your PvE skills. However, you can be as low as 350 to start the raid. You might want to have a couple of people closer to the 360 range to make killing adds easier, but it's totally doable at those lower light levels. It's going to get you some great drops. Couple of things that everyone should know. SIVA cash keys give you additional chance at raid loot from chests following the second boss fight. We've all seen the Death Zambonis. You know that's a thing. There's a chest after the Death Zamboni that you can open with the SIVA cash key. And then after the final fight, there's another chest. I think that one is still locked away. I think that's maybe what we're working on with this ARG, figuring out how to get into that. So you can get those cash keys from completing quests from Shiro. You also get some SIVA materials in the raid that you can trade in with Shiro to get additional cash keys, I believe. Also, on the note of SIVA, there are 4 SIVA clusters in the raid. There are a couple of jumping puzzles, a couple hidden elsewhere. I'm not going to spoil those for you exactly. I'll let you find those on your own. But just be aware, there are 4 clusters in the raid if you're trying to collect those, if you want to look them up. There are a few easy places to find those. A lot of video guides. You can always check out, I know Planet Destiny has them up. A couple other places have them up. So take a look for those. One other note, ammo. I actually ran out of primary ammo. I know a couple other people did too. It's going to be weapon dependent. When I was running a scout, I had no problems. When I was running Zalo to get my super up faster, I had a lot of ammo problems. So I'd recommend having primary, special, heavy synths all on your character ready to go. Try to time those out if you see yourself running low so that you don't get stuck, locked out. One other note as far as shields, you are going to run into some major pain in the ass void shielded enemies. So bring a void special or a void heavy to clear those. You are going to need it. And that, I think, is all I can safely say right now without ruining anything for anybody else. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, that void tip's definitely a good one. I knew about that from one of my friends, so I switched from leveling up all my gunslinger gear to leveling up all my night stalker gear just to make sure that I had void on tap. But yeah, all right, I think that's definitely it for us this week. We're closing out one of our longer podcasts now. Do you guys have anything else to add?
I'm good to call it a wrap. I think we got some good info there. Anything more and we'll just be talking to hear ourselves talk.
Yep, what about you, Cougar?
Yeah, I do that plenty enough. Let's cut it off now before I start again.
All right, you guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 12. Hope you appreciated the conversation. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Peace out, Guardians.